How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, October 8th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning. Nice to be here.
It is, in fact, a good morning because not only do I have you with me, I also have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
I was at a party in Austin once, a long time ago, and there was a band called Hunker Down. And they weren't very good. I spent the entire party pretending that it was Husker Du and commenting constantly about how much they've changed. This is me. This is how I roll. Straight face the whole time.
I wish I'd seen that. That's commitment.
Yeah, that's commitment.
Husker
with
Du.
Apologies to Husker Du.
I liked him a lot better before they played house really parties changed. In Austin. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. These guys have really changed, man. I don't know if I like this sound. Anyway, sorry. TDO.
All right. Yes. Now with more Husker Du. So the thing I want to talk about today is an article that Charlotte linked us to about sort of about Tim Cook and partly also about Steve Jobs and how Tim doesn't necessarily get the credit that this person feels that he should.
Hold on. Let me check the author. Let's see. Chuck, I wish I was as cool as Rob Enderle Jones. That's who wrote that piece.
Yes.
That is who wrote that piece. So I don't normally much care for his analysis, and quite frankly, his analysis is rather shallow in this particular piece as well. He's often quite wrong about Apple. In this particular case, I think he's just like, it's a very surfacey analysis. And should I summarize his argument?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he set up a false argument, and he went from there. Go ahead.
His argument basically is that Tim Cook is awesome because AirPods and Apple Watch now make billions of dollars every year, and services is becoming a very big revenue driver as well with fantastic margins. Therefore, Tim Cook is great. And Tim Cook doesn't get credit for those things. And it's just, like I said, it's a very surface.
I think Tim Cook does get a lot of credit. I think it's convenient to say that he doesn't get any credit to set yourself up for an article. But Tim Cook gets in the right circles.
People who don't
does get credit.
Yeah, but there is definitely some circles in the Mac world in particular, and I'm using the Mac world there very specifically, mm-hmm. who give Tim no credit.
Well, we got to distinguish between giving Tim credit for financial success and leading the company through the era in which it's in and contrasting that to Tim Cook as successful replacement for the psychology, for the flavor, and for the personality of Steve Jobs. He's no replacement for that, and people like to convolute those two, I think.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. And when I look at the successes that Tim Cook has had, that I don't look at Apple's revenues or profits. I mean, Steve Ballmer, I also wish I was as cool as Rob Enderle.
Now, this is where Brian Chaffin does his Steve Ballmer imitation, which is glorious.
Not today.
It's awesome.
Not today. Steve Ballmer grew revenues and almost destroyed Microsoft in the process. Mm-hmm. Tim Cook has grown revenues, and I think that he has, like, where he really needs to get credit is in keeping Apple from stumbling after the death of someone like Steve Jobs.
Good point.
Right.
And also in steering the company into other realms, theoretically at least, right? We haven't actually seen the fruits of these things. But if Apple is successful with its foray into medical data management, that will be enormous.
Yeah, that will be massive.
If Apple ends up playing a particular role in the intersection of electric vehicles, autonomous vehicles, and ride sharing, that will be a huge, very big deal. If Apple brings real augmented reality into our daily lives, that is going to change the way we live life on a day-to-day basis, at least as much as the iPhone changed day-to-day life. And now all of those things are still in the past. And then we've got, you know, we've had these years where we had no, where Macs weren't getting updated and iPads weren't getting updated and Apple stopped making AirPorts and, you know, Apple stopped making displays and Apple, like, you know, Apple, like the 1 year with Apple released 14 new products in the whole year. I mean, that's just, oh, God, that's just so insane. Those things are super frustrating, but this bigger picture of where Apple is going is huge. And you either believe that Apple is working towards that future or you don't. I personally do believe that Apple is working to some very big things. And I think that Tim Cook needs to, if it happens, that Tim Cook needs to get credit for that.
You said something that sparked my thinking about innovation, because Jones does get into Apple and innovation a little bit. Innovation is not something you can force. Innovation is something that happens naturally as a result of a confluence of events. It's not just dreaming up technology and driving it down our throats. It's understanding how technology is evolving, having the right technology at your fingertips and refined and usable and marketable and sellable, and also be able to fit in with the psychology and the thinking of the culture. So if somebody might come along with some great new product that they think is going to replace the iPhone, but it's not, its time has not yet come. And so, I'm remembering an article that I think Andrew pointed to a couple of weeks ago about how an iPhone would have looked in the 80s. It was basically a little iPod with a dialer on it. Mm-hmm. And we laugh at it and we say how primitive that is compared to the final instantiation in, you know, glass and metal in the iPhone 2007. So it's a lost cause to say we're going to be, you know, darn it, we're going to be innovative. I want a new product out next year. I don't care what it is, but I want it to be new and exciting. Behind the scenes, things evolve. Software evolves, hardware evolves, technology enables. Somebody gets a bright idea, they play with it for a while, and then it maybe flourishes, and then Apple realizes that there's a potential market for it and how it fits in with their product line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it starts off really slow, like the iPad did, but then gains momentum as the marketplace comes to appreciate it. And so our frog is slowly boiled with innovation as a product matures and proves its worthiness over time. Mm-hmm. But I think too often observers and journalists think of innovation as some, oh, my God, lift the curtain and blow me away with some new product out of the blue.
Well, and I think part of that is, I mean, you see this in lots of, for lack of a better word, you see this in a lot of fandoms where there's a certain faction of people who say, I want change, I want it to be different. And then it's different. And then they go, well, not that way.
Right.
And so, you know, people who don't wear watches, you know, would accuse Apple of not innovating and the watch isn't great. And, you know, why would they do this? And it's not revolutionary. But, you know, in a lot of ways, there are a lot of people that, you know, like Brian had mentioned earlier, there are a lot of people that it's changed their day to day life.
The watch didn't become innovative until the psychology at Apple changed and went from a fashion device to a health monitoring and activity and,
right,
and it's a fitness device.
Yeah,
I reject that.
That was an innovation in thinking.
I reject that. I completely reject that. The fashion aspect of Apple Watch was necessary to get people to take it seriously.
Okay, that's true.
That was the point.
I give you that.
That was the point of the fashion. Now Apple shifted to focus on the things that people actually did with it. But like the Apple Watch.
That was the innovation part. the shift in the thinking.
I don't know. I would argue that they were going to do that all along. The fashion part was the Trojan horse
that
held the health, right?
I think it kind of grew, and then Apple realized they had something, and then they started amplifying on it and leveraging on it.
I think, I actually agree with John on that. But the fashion component was necessary as a first step. The gold Apple Watch edition was a fabulous success, not because it sold a lot of units, because it did not, and it was never intended to. It was a success because it defined Apple Watch out the gate as something more than an ugly computer on your wrist. That was its point. That was its purpose, its raison d'etre, and it succeeded in that. All right, I got another thought for you. The transition from Steve Jobs to CEO. Don't get me wrong. Steve Jobs worked very hard on this himself. Steve Jobs worked very hard on Apple University, along with I think his name was Ken. I always forget this guy's name, but the person who from Yale who originally helped sort of codify and roll out Apple University, working with Steve in the process of doing that. Steve knew his time on Earth was coming to an end, and he was working so hard to make sure that Apple could survive him. Now, Steve gets credit for everything he did towards that end. But with the death of Steve Jobs, Apple went from a company where everything, one way or another, went up the ladder to Steve Jobs. And it became a company where Tim Cook did not try to maintain that same kind of control, because he doesn't have Steve Jobs's gifts for minutia and gifts for that you know, that je ne sais quoi, you know, like what's going to make a product be be amazing, or you know, the little fine touches that are just going to like make it better than everything else. Tim Cook doesn't do that, and he successfully transitioned Apple away from a company where, you know, everything stopped with Steve to a company that functioned differently. And that is astounding. Yeah. It is astounding that Apple didn't just fall on its face for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years after Steve Jobs died.
The CEO has to be right for the company and for the times in which he serves.
What is it, the Mike Myers' character, Jewish woman, the New
Linda
York Jewish
Richman.
Woman?
She
Linda
does Richman. Coffee talk. Yeah.
Was it her line that was, Tim Cook, great Apple CEO or greatest Apple CEO?
Discuss,
right? That would be, that's. I mean, I know it's sacrilege to say that Steve Jobs wasn't the greatest Apple CEO, and there's certainly a tremendous argument to be made for that. But if Apple ends up becoming this other company, if Apple ends up being part of this $1 trillion medical records industry, mm-hmm. in a more overt way than we're seeing now, if Apple becomes a player in the automobile market in some way, in the ride-sharing market in some way, and if those goggles come, and these are just the things we know about. Mm-hmm. These are just the things we know about. Throw in non-invasive glucose monitoring, if Apple can bring that to market too. If Apple can end up doing these big, huge, massive R&D efforts that are happening in the background right now and make these things happen, Apple's going to be a completely different company. The planet's going to be a completely different place. And what it means to be an Apple fan is going to continue to change, and Tim Cook should get and probably will end up getting credit for that.
You know, I was thinking about that this morning. I knew that this discussion was going to go exactly along the lines that you talked about, and I agree with you. But a good example in my mind was Bob Hope. Those of us who remember him probably think that there's never been a comedian as good at entertaining the troops as Bob Hope was. And it leads one to crystallize your memory in the times in which it happened. And you carry that crystallization forward with you, and you compare everything against that crystallized memory concept. And it's a brittle idea. It's a brittle notion because you're not taking into account, as you said, Brian, the change in the technology, the change in the culture, the change in the economy, the change in Apple's flow of technology and hardware and software. And you have to kind of give up that crystallized notion of the past that you wrapped your head around so firmly and stop trying to compare Tim Cook to Steve Jobs. Two different companies, two different eras, two different needs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what gets lost.
What he's doing now.
I want to emphasize or iterate this from earlier. Those of us who want to see new Macs every year, right? We're not getting that, and therefore Tim Cook sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right. And that is only part of the picture. It is a part that frustrates me too. Although we actually are getting more frequent updates recently.
Yeah.
To Max, and I hope that continues. But I mean, I'm not okay with the way Mac iterations stopped. I'm just saying that it's not the whole picture.
Right.
Right.
Well, and I think that there's a certain amount of, when you listen to the complaints, I think when people talk about how Tim Cook isn't doing a good job or this wouldn't have happened under Steve, things like that. What you tend to hear is more about the person trying to advance the argument than you do about Apple, regardless of what era or CEO they're talking about. Because you will hear from people like Brian's talking about, we don't get new Macs every year. Okay. What that tells me is that you want to buy a new computer every year or every 18 months and you aren't able to do that. And that's not the same as, Apple's as well as a company.
Brand new prices for 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old technology.
Which is fine.
There's a difference. It's not about buying a new one every year. It's about when I am ready to buy something that I'm able to buy something that's new.
Yes.
That's why I get pissy about the dearth of new Macs.
I know.
Where is our iMac Pro?
Because we've talked about that on the show.
2.5 years ago, that was introduced. Two years ago.
Where is the iMac Pro?
Almost 2 years ago, it shipped.
No, we know where the iMac Pro is. We want the iMac Pro 2. Like, there hasn't been any iteration. We got the first one, and it was pretty, and it came with that space gray keyboard, and everybody really liked it. And
no door for changing the RAM.
Yeah, and that's the same machine that's available today. And yeah, so
same price though, but it's cool because it's the same price.
on that front, you were correct. But like, you can usually tell what it is that people are unhappy about, because remember, people were mad that it had been too long between iPad updates, and then we got one in the spring, and we got another in the fall, and then people were mad that Apple was doing too much at the same time. So
yeah, that's true. There's an element to some people are never going to be satisfied.
Exactly.
And don't forget that the whining about how Apple can't innovate anymore started about 9 months after Steve Jobs passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And it ramped up for like the first 3 years after Steve Jobs died. And during that time, anything that Apple would have released, Steve Jobs would have been involved in.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, it was such a nonsense argument. It was such a nonsense argument, not to mention the fact that Apple itself had never been on a regular period of releasing a new innovative products.
Yep.
And today, to Chuck Jones's, I'm sorry, can we give him his proper name? To Chuck, I wish I was as cool as Rob Enderle Jones and his piece, AirPods have ended up being a fabulous success, and Apple Watch has been a fabulous success too.
And when people services
are bringing in lots of money.
This is a thing that I think about, because people are like, well, they did, people will talk about them because they're like forced to acknowledge that Apple released something new, right? Well, there's AirPods. Let me tell you a story about AirPods. I really wanted a pair of AirPods. I couldn't get AirPods for almost, I think it was the better part of a year, and then eventually I gave up. And then held out for 2.0 and then couldn't get a hold of 2.0 when I wanted 2.0. So I have them now, but they were really hard to come by. And it's not because Apple made like six sets of AirPods and then, they were golden tickets You know, like, that's not how this worked. So that's the thing to me that's really frustrating is that, you know, I remember, like, them talking about nobody can get their hands on AirPods. And, you know, the Apple Watch, every time it's iterated, tends to get a little more difficult to find. You know, there's stuff all the time. And maybe, you know, yeah, maybe Tim wasn't day-to-day involved and absolutely 100% running things when the iPhone debuted. But he was the guy in charge when I started being able to buy stuff with it, when I started being able to unlock it with my finger, when I started being able to unlock it with my face. So it's not like Apple's not innovating, but if what you want is another iPhone-level success, like, Apple's done three fundamental technological shifts to society already. How many more do you think you need? You know, they started with the home computer. They gave us the portable audio player that was worth anything. And they gave us mobile computing. Like, if they do nothing else, they're still a massively impactful company just in that respect. Like, in my lifetime. So those are the things I think about when people talk about, you know, oh, there's not innovation. You know, it's like, if you try to get an iPhone 11 or an 11 Pro right now, you're still going to be a couple of weeks out in most cases. So, you know, and that's been some time. So I find it really frustrating that this is that this is the kind of thing that we even still have to have a conversation about, because something happened that prompted what's his name again, Brian?
I've lost do you mean Chuck?
The author of the article.
I wish I was as cool as Rob Enderle Jones.
That's it. I have a hard time with his middle name. I always forget it.
Yeah, exactly.
Something prompted him to write this article, and something prompted someone to publish it. You know, so somebody thought there was validity in having to point out, like, Tim Cook doesn't suck, right? So, yeah, and you can buy T-shirts that say Tim Cook doesn't suck in our web store at t-shirts.macobserver.com. I'm totally kidding. Brian's like, we have shirts. So it's definitely it's an interesting conversation to talk about how Apple has evolved and changed and what kind of company they are now versus what kind of company they used to be. And honestly, the thing that I'm curious about is where they end up going next. Like, I have a pretty good feel for where they are right now, I kind of think. And so I'm looking forward to the next big thing that comes out of them. Like Brian was talking about, if it's goggles or transportation or medical record kinds of stuff. I think something like that is going to be really interesting. And, you know, when you point out to people, like, this is the same company that made iPods, you know, as long as you're not talking to somebody like Andrew who says, what's an iPod, you know, then it turns out to be a really interesting evolution. How the company started versus, you know, what they are now.
Yeah, evolution is the key. I don't think you're going to see any more breakthrough products that are stunning and standalone and surprise us. I think you're going to see products like the AirPods and the Apple Watch, which get launched, people go ho-hum, and then it evolves, and then it finds its place in the marketplace, and then people look back 2 or 3 years later and say, oh, that was an innovative product.
Yeah, at the time, it's very eh. And the thing that I can say about the Apple Watch at a minimum is that it changed my life every single day, because it reminds me to get up and walk around. It makes sure I get a certain amount of exercise, and I try to achieve that every day. And that's something that I wasn't doing before I started wearing this watch.
Yeah, it's changed my life, too.
Yeah. So I think there's definitely something to it. And we will talk about all of that more on future episodes. I want to thank both of you very much for being here today to have this conversation. John, thanks so much for coming by.
It was nice to be here.
It was a delight to have you, as always. And Brian, thanks so much for being here with me today.
Yep, thanks for having us. Good times.
I enjoy when both of you are on, and part of that is because you make my job so easy. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.